Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, God. What is I hope we're all Savabiening. This is Sybil Brunson coming to you live high atop the Chrysler Building, the heart of Manhattan, from the revolving ballroom of the Cafe Berlin. We're broadcasting to you live. Can you imagine? It's very exciting to be here with you tonight. I know winter is grinding on for most of us. It's, you know, mid-February almost, and that is a terrible time for, you know, the winter is, you know, already been on for so long, and we still have a lot of winter ahead of us, really, unless, of course, the earth warms itself completely and we have 85-degree weather on March 1st, which I seriously doubt. But we're slogging through and plodding through the rest of winter, and we're so glad that you joined us tonight. I'm here in the Cafe Berlin with my wonderful, wonderful host and Blog Talk muse, Gwendolyn Holdenberry. Gwendolyn, how are you tonight?
I'm fair to middling. I really am.
Well, you sound better than fair, and you're definitely not in Midland. We're going to broadcast someday from someplace called Midland, Texas, or whatever. Our sponsor tonight, as always, is daughtersofisis.com. That's all one word, daughtersofisis.com. By the way, this ISIS is the goddess ISIS. It has nothing to do with bad policy of immigrants or foreign powers or anything. Daughtersofisis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. Folks, run, do not walk, to their website, daughtersofisis.com, all one word, and check out the wonderful products that they sell, essential oils and fragrances to expand your olfactory senses and your spiritual and metaphysical senses. It's all there. It's your intellect, your spirit, your soul, everything. It will expand your consciousness, and I can't recommend it enough. Tonight, I am wearing Kaifi. I decided that I would wear a fragrance every week and see how my performances go. So tonight I'm wearing a fragrance called Kaifi. And Gwendolyn, what should you as my producer be expecting that I actually spritzed myself with Kaifi and, if truth be told, took a swig of it too beforehand?
nothing less than being a goddess, because Kaifi is the original. It's the original temple incense. It's an old, old well with my bent on it. The original temple incense from ancient Egypt. So, and we're starting out with a bang this evening. Oh, we've already got a phone call in. So.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we'll take that in 1 minute. That's great. That's wonderful. And we'll go back to Kaifi, too. We'll talk in a minute. I just want to remind you that the phone number tonight is 323-784-9639. That's 323-784-9639. We're taking phone calls tonight, and we'll talk about anything, but I do have a couple of subjects I'd like to address if we can. Let's take our phone caller and see what he or she has to say.
Okay, area code 46.
Hello, my sweet. How are you, dear? Are you back in New York already, dear?
Who is this?
This is Lance, my dear, all the way from Texas, darling. How are you?
It's good to hear you. How are you, darling?
Oh, dear, I'm just a lot of sorts. You know, I want to go straight away here and talk about this blackface stuff going on. You know, everyone out here is talking all about it.
Right. Well, I did post, I took a chance, and I was so glad that Gwendolyn let me. I posted that collage of different, you know, historical products and advertising images of blackface. And yes, there's a lot to discuss because our news cycle for every week we do this show, the news cycle, I wish the news cycle was one thing. Monday to Monday, Monday to Monday. But as all of you know, our news cycles, certainly since Trump has been elected, are literally running. There's new news every 10 or 15 minutes. You turn off the television or you don't tune into, social media for 2 or 3 hours, and you turn it back on and you find out that there was a nuclear war and that New York is gone. It's just like every news cycle vomits new things.
Right.
This black face thing has infiltrated every part of our culture, everything. So where do you stand on it, darling? What is your stand on this? Before you answer, let me just say this. That was a stupid question for me to ask, because we have to select one slice of the pie, because to say where do you stand on blackface, it's like, oh my God, you could write an encyclopedia. So I'm going to propose this one thing. Today in my research, listen to this. Everyone is totally against blackface, completely against blackface, totally politically incorrect. And yet, Jimmy Fallon did a Chris Rock impression on both SNL and for the Golden Globes. Jimmy Kimmel of Comedy Central did blackface on The Man Show more than once, dressed up as he was in blackface and a bald cap and a bodysuit to portray former Utah Jazz basketball star Karl Malone as an inarticulate, dim-witted person who had difficulty pronouncing words correctly. And last but not least, Sarah Silverman in a comedy sketch where she hired an actor named Alex Desert, and she and he did a sketch in which they switched roles and races. She claimed it was harder to be Jewish, and he claimed it was harder to be black. So they spent the sketch was, what was life like being the other person? He became a Jewish guy with payas and a yarmulke and everything, and she did blackface as a black person. So here's three super liberal, very left-wing comedians, politically very far to the left, who have done blackface for whatever reasons. What do you think of that? What do you think
about it? Well, my dear, let me tell you, I think it is rather hypocrisy, I must say, hypocrisy. I mean, you got somebody in blackface here, you know, and we are not supposed to be liking that. No, it's politically incorrect, as Mommy says. It is. Now, I was just at grocery today, and I'm walking up and down the aisles. Let me tell you, Mommy. There's no other place that's more racial than a grocery store these days. Why, have you seen the Aunt Jemima? Why must we have an Aunt Jemima in this day and age? Uncle Ben's rice? Why do we have to have an Uncle Ben? And there's a picture of them up there. Oh, it's so tactless. So tactless.
Okay.
And not only that, they're after the white folk too, Mommy. They Yosemite Sam screaming yams or whatever has a picture of a cracker boy from the 40s. Oh, it's just so insulting. So insulting. And here, these are things that have been on the grocery shelves now for absolute decades. They are in our homes. When are we going to clear our own shelves, Mommy? That is what I have to say about that.
Well, it's very interesting that you bring up these images, because these images are well-beloved and well-accepted images from the past. Uncle Ben, is very much Aunt Jemima. Interesting that they are relatives, apparently, of the American family. It's not Jemima Robertson and Uncle, and Ben Simpson or anything. It's just Uncle Ben, and we're so familiar with him that we just call him Uncle Ben, which, when I was young, I called everybody, including black people, I had to address them as Mr. or Mrs. or Miss. I couldn't be familiar with first names. So it's interesting right there that we've made them diminutive enough that we call it Aunt Jemima, Uncle Ben. Poppin' Fresh is an interesting idea there. Poppin' Fresh, apparently, I've done the research, is a person with albinism. He is an albino. And yet we have completely disrespected him. There's all sorts of situations. Betty Crocker has been a lesbian for years, and we never met her husband. We don't know her husband.
Absolutely.
Duncan Hines, by the way, Duncan Hines is Jewish and changed the spelling of his last name to become a WASP, to become a Lutheran. But in fact, it was Duncan, H-E-I-N-Z, and may in fact be a distant relative of the Hines family. These products are steeped in American deception, and it goes on and on and on. So I don't know what to say.
Well,
I know that many of them
have
retired on the vast money they've made. Poppin' Fresh is actually the shortest billionaire in the world. He has that distinction. He is only 4 inches high, but is worth $40 billion. Perhaps he just drowned his sorrow.
Of them all. He's the most whitest of the privileged, I'm sure.
Well,
I did want to ask you, you know, you probably remember from when you were just a bit of a girl where the names aunt and uncle actually came from. You know, these were the people, and you know, I'm not supposed to be saying this. Oh, my God, you know, oh, how could he say this? What in the world? What they came from, if you were in the household and you were preceded with the name of aunt and uncle, whether you were a slave or not, you know, and this went on, you were perceived as being extremely close to the family. In fact, you were actually considered one of the family so much that you were called aunt or uncle. And that is how it came about. Nobody can look that in the mirror today, though. Nobody can do that. But that is how it got started.
Yes, it's extraordinary. Yep.
It is. And
very true. Very, very true.
Yes.
And I'm reminded of... I'm sorry, what?
What, dear?
Aunt and uncle. I mean, you know, my mom's best friend was Aunt Audrey. It was like that. My godmother was Aunt Kay.
Yes. Right.
I mean, that's how we were raised.
Right.
Well,
exactly.
I think people have simply gone round the bend with this, and it's just that they're passing on a lot of. I just think it's there's so many people who are actually having quite a hit of it, and that's not their intention, but it is what's happening. And I just, you know, I think we ought to come to grips or something with that. And you know, I mean, we just need to get for real. I mean, people need to have more of a mind. I believe Mommy said this on Facebook. She said, "Where are people's minds? Where are they?" They have just taken leave.
Well,
yes,
very good point.
I'm so glad you're back.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. As a matter of fact, I'm going to address the Mary Poppins soot photograph of that came up on Facebook in just a second. I want to thank you for calling though tonight, darling. Thank you. You hit it right out of the park. You gave us a home run on that because that was the top of our news item list tonight was where we stand on blackface. So thank you for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome, darling. I'm only sorry your best friend, Mrs. Fowler Diamond, could not be in on the call at the same time. I know they still have party line at Chrysler, you know. They just never give up that stuff, you know. Well, I must be trotting along now. And thank you so much for having me, Mommy. I do appreciate it. Thank you for having my say.
Well, it was wonderful to have you. So I will talk to you very soon again. Thank you again for calling in.
Absolutely, dear. To you, darling.
Good night. I want to address the Mary Poppins thing. If, for those of you that don't know what this was, there was an article, and I can't remember where it was posted, but maybe it was in the New York Times. It was a photograph of Mary Poppins, Julie Andrews, and Dick Van Dyke, and it was a still photograph, probably a press photograph, from the original 1964 film of Mary Poppins, and they both are covered with soot. And a gentleman who claimed to be a professor wrote in and said that this was promoting blackface early on, and that it was what does he say? I'm trying to pull up the link. I can't do it right now. I'm having a technical difficulty.
Obviously, he had no idea of the legend and lore that surround chimney sweeps.
Well, or he did, but he was trying to be ultra politically correct. And he was bringing this up. This is brand new, this article. And this is what I said in response, because people were outraged, absolutely outraged, that this person would take a movie like Mary Poppins, whose leftist sentiments are extremely strong. I mean, Mary Poppins is clearly a socialist. Mr. Banks and the bank and the bank officials and everything. It is as far left to give your money away to an old lady who's poor in the street to feed birds. I mean, there's no question that this is a leftist film. And on top of that, that it's a miracle that Disney went ahead and did it, because his right-wing politics he was kind of a strange person. He had very right-wing attitudes. He certainly was anti-Semitic. But what was interesting was that he sort of wanted to build a utopia for his workers, and he built a city for his workers at the Disney studios. However, he wanted to control their lives. So they lived in what was technically a factory town, and they lived in residences, and they didn't have to drive cars because they were living on campus, so to speak. So he had a kind of right-wing, left-wing, fascistic attitude towards the world, sprinkled heavily with a lot of paternalism against a condescension towards blacks, and active anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish attitudes. But anyway, the bottom line is this. This person, this professor, proposed that this was all a crypto anti-black, it was blackface and mocking blacks. And what I said was, I hate when intelligence, sophistication, and culture are derailed by meaningless devil's advocacy and whimsical, quote-unquote, political correctness. The people that propose these idiotic positions, like the fact that Mary Poppins' chimney sweep scene is blackface, these positions and arguments, which are clearly idiotic, completely bankrupt the progress that the human race is trying to make through sincere struggles year by year, decade by decade, century by century. This quote-unquote professor should be stuffed with nails and thrown into the same bonfire as that jiggling bag of orange monkey pudding in the White House and all his flat worlder minions. Stupidity, grotesque stupidity on either the left or the right is the toxic enemy that is corroding civilization, and none of it or its sponsors should be tolerated under any circumstances. And this, and Gwendolyn, I know, is going to agree with me. This takes us back to our topic last week, when we were talking about the whole incident in Washington at the Lincoln Monument. And when we were talking about, we're talking about all sorts of things. We're talking about Governor Ralph Northam of Virginia in blackface. And is his career over? Is his apology enough? Is his being an active civil rights governor enough to erase what he did? Is Tulsi Gabbard's apology enough on her anti-LGBTQ stand? Nicholas Sandman and the Covington Catholic School, with the Native American war vet, Nathan Phillips, all of this back and forth, the Black Hebrew Israelites that were at that same demonstration, but you barely hear anything about them. It's very important for us on the left to be very, very, very clean. Nobody loves Elizabeth Warren more than me, but we have to be very careful about Native American claims that are gaffes. We can't, because I emphasize this again, the NRA, the KKK, the GOP, Donald Trump, his whole army of thugs will squeeze through the eye of a needle to make anything that we do on the left the size of Gibraltar. They will inflate the smallest thing into the size of Gibraltar, and they will make it absolutely the end of the world. I am asking that everyone, my brothers and sisters on the left, whether you're centrist left or all the way over and waving a red banner with a sickle and a hammer on it, wherever you are on this side of the aisle, we have got to be careful. We've got to listen to news stories start to finish. We can't be caught inflating something that's on the news because we didn't listen to the whole story. We can't be caught making foolish statements, foolish gaffes. We can't be caught in blackface at this time. At this time, if it's a sincere error, yes, apologize. Try to make up for it. But if you're a governor of a state, continue to do your good work out in the public eye. But your term as governor is ruined. It's gone. Your viability is gone. This new Ilhan Omar, is that how you pronounce her name? Ilhan or Ilhan? Ilhan Omar, the congresswoman who made veiled sort of anti-Semitic statements. But you've got to be careful. You're not some stupid cashier at a 7-Eleven at 3 in the morning. You're a congresswoman now. You have to know what you're saying. And yes, everyone makes a mistake. But the problem is that as a cashier at 7-Eleven, your boss may let you get away with it and make an apology to the customer that you insulted. But you're a congresswoman. Your career can be ruined in a matter of seconds. My grandmother, my wise grandmother, used to say to me, "Sybil, darling, it takes 10 years to make a great reputation. It takes 10 seconds to ruin it." And my grandmother died long before there was the internet. It doesn't take 10 seconds. It takes 10 milliseconds. And by the way, she was living in a time when a newspaper was how people learned your reputation. And by the way, newspapers lasted 2 or 3 days on the coffee table, and then they were used to wrap up some chopped vegetables and a dead fish, you know, the fish carcass, and thrown in the garbage. Back then, you had to go to a library to find a newspaper that was older, if they even kept them, to read a headline about you. Now, your mistakes are in 10 milliseconds and live forever on the internet. They live forever on the internet. And oh, by the way, grandma, who's long dead, not only do they live forever, but they can be false. So in the old days, if somebody lied about you in a newspaper, the newspaper ended up in the garbage. And even if it lived in a library, you could sometimes get a retraction and there'd be a new newspaper on the racks or in their you know, newspaper files of a retraction. Any retraction that happens now, it doesn't erase the news item that's in the internet about you. People can lie left and right. Fox News is built completely on lies, and those are never retracted. Those news items in the internet on their websites and everything are never retracted. No apology is ever given if they've gotten something completely wrong. That's why this whole incident about the National Lampoon is so important. I'm all for a free press. The National Lampoon is not a free press. It's a thug paper. That building should have been burned down years ago with everyone in it. With everyone in it. That has been peddling trash forever. And the problem is that Carol Burnett couldn't sue them for enough money. The people that have sued them were not allowed to sue them for $800 billion, which is what should have happened 25 years ago. Someone should have been allowed to sue them for $800 billion and then wipe them out. And that would have been it. That would have been it. But no, they continue to peddle this stuff. And so I'm not a big Bezos fan on any level, but I'm thrilled that he's taking his billions, and I'm hoping he is going to exhaust them. I want that paper burned to the ground and the empty lot sowed with salt. I want the soil with the cinders on it sown with salt. That is way overdue. So people's reputations have got to be careful. And I want to go back on this whole thing. Again, I mentioned Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, Sarah Silverman. They've all expressed embarrassment that they did these sketches. But they've approached comedy, okay, the way Mel Brooks approached Springtime for Hitler. And he has taken heat for decades from people who are very, very politically correct, that you can't joke about the Holocaust and have Springtime for Hitler and all of that. You can't do that. It's like, okay, but at what point do it, – it's very tricky. I'm not going to answer this question, by the way. Like, don't call and ask me, well, Mummy, what do you think about Jimmy Fallon in blackface? Well, what do you think about Mel Brooks in – because I feel that that is a – that's a radio band, like on the old radios where you turn the dial and the dial and that little red line goes all through the stations, all the way to the left and all the way to the right. It's interesting. Where do you fall? Where do you fall? Is it okay that Mel Brooks did Springtime for Hitler? Is it okay that Jimmy Fallon made fun of Chris Rock? Is it okay that Eddie Murphy did whiteface and made fun of white people? And did all of those sketches about white people. Is that okay? Was he referencing blackface? The whole idea, well, is that a backlash about the way blackface works in reverse? So a black person doing whiteface, making fun of white people. It's all in there. It's all in there. It's a deck of cards that's being shuffled. And it's like, oh, my God. What's the card on the top? Flip it over. Queen of Diamonds. What's the next card? Two of Clubs. It's like, oh, my goodness. Where do we go with freedom of speech, comedy, fiction, satire, irony? I'll tell you one thing I'm finding, just being Sybil Brunchen, the number of people on my page, my quote-unquote Facebook friends, who don't know, who don't recognize irony or sarcasm.
Yeah.
They don't recognize comedy of, like, it's really, really. I mean, let's just, you know, something, the Quakers have more sense of humor. I mean, let's just sit with our hands folded in our laps and not comment on anything, because comedy is based on, and I've said this before, and this is one of the things that Gwendolyn and I first talked about when we first met. Comedy, all comedy, is based on tragedy. It's based on horror, misfortune, loss, setbacks, disappointments. The lowest comedy of all, the easiest to understand comedy of all, clown comedy in a circus where there's no spoken, nothing spoken. Comedy, slapstick comedy in silent film where there is no word spoken, okay? The lowest comedy, the easiest to understand is slapstick. It is slipping on a banana peel. It is getting a pie in the face. It is a society lady in a beautiful gown with beautiful jewelry and a tiara walking through a door and getting hit in the face with a pie. And then she slips on the floor, goes up in the air, and crashes onto the ballroom floor. And a pie fight ensues. Okay, that is the lowest comedy. In real life, an older woman, Margaret Dumont, weighing 200 pounds, becoming aerial, and flying up in the air, perfect horizontal, and crashing to the floor would result in at least a broken hip, a broken arm, and possibly a fractured skull. And we could all sit there and go, that comedy that Charlie Chaplin did, that Buster Keaton, that is thoughtless and cruel. And it has ageism in it. It has sexism in it. Yes.
It did.
We could completely shut the human cortex down, the brain down, the cerebrum down, and simply not laugh. But that's what people do. I think some animals have senses of humor. I think a dog, cats certainly have a sense of humor.
Yeah.
So humans, to deal with burning their fingers on that strange yellow thing that came from the lightning strike back to a million years ago, you know, when lightning first struck a tree and they were looking at the pretty thing that was glowing on the ground and they reached out and they touched it and they burned their hand. Others of them laughed. They were witnessing something and they processed info with the strange phenomenon of laughter, the strange phenomenon of being a human being and finding comedy as a way of reasoning through tragedy. Reasoning through the loss, Mel Brooks, an extremely intelligent man, his wife, infinitely more intelligent than him, as far as I'm concerned. He looked at the Holocaust and he thought, wouldn't it be funny if Jewish people tried to produce a show and raised money on a nightmare and called it that, and then were screwed. This is the most incredible. And then they got screwed. Max Bialystock, a Jewish guy, got screwed by trying to portray Hitler as a comedy. The whole thing is it's an onion within a shell. It's an onion that you peel back the layers. It's wonderful. It's a joke within a joke within a joke within a joke. But there are Jewish people that completely shunned Mel Brooks and thought he was a nightmare for doing that. There were WASPs who thought it was
really?
Appalling. Because they were trying, they were trying to champion their Jewish friends.
I never knew that was the thing. You mean like Springtime for Hitler and the producers? And,
yes,
and,
yes. Yeah.
God.
People just thought
never
that was
that.
Horrible. Of course you did, because you are able to, you're able to discern irony and satire what's another word? Irony is the best. But this is what we're surrounded with right now. I want to point out that there are other situations. Eddie Murphy, of course, doing whiteface. Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland did blackface, as did everyone back in the vaudeville era, because that was a holdover. It was a holdover. But I want to point out, Laurence Olivier did blackface. Blackface and black body. He was completely covered in black when he did Othello, which was an Oscar-nominated film. And there's no way that a white person can do Othello without doing makeup, because Othello is referred to over and over and over again as the Moor. He is the black Moor. He is meant to be a North African black Moor who happens to be, if you do your homework, about Othello, unlike Lawrence Fishburne, who didn't want to, you know, read Othello before he did the movie because he didn't want it to influence his performance. I mean, let's talk about idiotic. But anyway, Othello is a hero. The play opens with him being an acclaimed war hero. He's a brave, brave hero. And that's why he qualifies to marry a great lady, Desdemona, whichever way you want to pronounce it. And Desdemona is white. And she, in the movie, you know, when they do this movie, they'll cast someone like Maggie Smith, the whitest woman that ever lived, as Desdemona. And then they'll cast, you know, they rarely cast a black person as Othello. I mean, they do now. It's a choice part for a black man. But Laurence Olivier did it and was, you know, he got great acclaim for it. These are the things we're going through. Again, it's up to Northam and his cohorts to search their own I'm getting tongue-tied. Their consciences and their mindfulnesses. And I refer them immediately to daughtersofisis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. Get some kaifi and turn off the lights and lie down and search your soul. But it's up to them to figure out if they need to resign. That you'll notice that no one has decided yet to impeach them for this. And how could they, how would they succeed? Because it's not an impeachable offense, technically. I mean, we have someone in office. We have a whole bunch of people running the country who are doing things that are clearly criminal and, in my opinion, are treasonous. So they've gone beyond their petty scams and their sad collusion things. They are approaching, they're approaching Rosenberg level treason. I mean, they are, for all we know, it may be worse. They may not have given away secrets, but the Rosenbergs didn't sway an election, and they both were sent to the electric chair. I would not bat an eye if you know who and his entire family went to the electric chair. I have people that get wax sentimental about the Romanovs. I have a very good friend who's obsessed with the Romanovs and their aesthetic and their beautiful things and their beautiful jewelry and their Fabergé eggs and everything. And I can appreciate that. I appreciate the beauty of what they created. I certainly appreciate what the Bourbons did in France and what they created. As a matter of fact, I have a friend who is one of the foremost historians in the world on the Versailles furniture and decorative arts. He is a lecturer, and he lectures all the time at the Metropolitan Museum, and he is one of the foremost experts in the world. He and my other friend, who is obsessed with the Romanovs, they get so sentimental about the objects and the creativity of these people that they ignore the fact that millions of people
died,
starved, so that people could have beautiful things and build beautiful buildings and create beautiful ballet companies and museums. Now, my Russian friend is frantic that the Romanov children were executed in the basement with their parents. I feel nothing. Where are the tears for the millions of Russian children that starved, died, and were raised in poverty, which resulted in child abuse, child prostitution, diseases, people murdering their children, murdering their daughters. You know, a newborn baby was a girl, drown it, because the only thing that would be viable in a family would be a boy. A girl is something that, you know, even though she would work with her mother, she would have to have a dowry. Who would she marry if she didn't have any money? But a boy can go out and plow a field. But I mean, the millions of people that were lost and were boo-hooing about the Romanov children,
Well, they still do that in China, you know, with children.
Yes,
girls,
of course.
Children.
Of course, we're still living with that.
It's
appalling. And China's not the only place. This has been going on in India. This has been going on in all sorts of places where people dispose of babies, and specifically baby girls. Back to the Romanovs. My heartbreak for the Romanovs, the communists shot the servants and the dog. Why would you kill their spaniel? You take the dog out of there, and these are servants that work for them. You don't have to kill the servants. The servants are just better washed versions of you. You know, it's like, wait a minute, you're shooting your own brothers and sisters. They just happen to be able to bathe regularly because they were inside the palace. But they're no better than you. They're no better. They're no higher than you. In the French Revolution, sadly, revolutions dine on their young. That's the old expression. They begin to eat their young. The French Revolution, they ran out of the aristocracy, so then they began to execute the middle class. And then when they ran out of the middle class, they started to kill their own kind. Robespierre was killing poor people left and right. He was seeing, you know, conspiracies around every corner. So you had to always prove you were ultra left, just like in Stalin's Russia. Everyone began betraying each other because the revolution became a bonfire that was out of control, and a bonfire must be fed. A bonfire becomes alive and it starts to eat everything. So what you need to do is, if you don't want the bonfire to spread to the forest and burn the city down, you contain it and you keep offering the bonfire more wood or more, you know, candle makers and bakers and, you know, a pottery guy and there's a shoemaker. And, you know, you throw them in the bonfire. And that's what these revolutions do. That's what's tragic. But back to this whole thing, we are living, and Gwendolyn said this at the beginning, we are entering a time of extreme, like, kookiness. And that's why we have professors who begin to lecture us from the left, can you imagine, on Mary Poppins and Dick, what's his name, the character he played, Hubert. Bert and Mary are in blackface. Any moron knows that they were. And then somebody came up with the thing, well, she does open her compact and powder her nose, and she powders black soot on her nose. She powdered her nose at the beginning of the film. The conceit is that she is so proper that she doesn't have a shiny nose. She powdered her nose, checked her compact mirror, you know, spit spot, and she is perfect in every way, right? Practically perfect in every way. I believe she may powder her nose twice in the movie before she powders her nose with the soot. The joke is that she is out on the town with Bert, and that they are now going to be entertained by all these dancing chimney sweeps, and she's making sure that she looks proper. She is in her perfect clothes, which are now filthy with soot. She's got smudges of soot on her face, and she powders her nose to be perfectly appropriate for the occasion, which means that she powders her nose with black powder. She's not doing blackface. It's not blackface. You're an idiot. You should be stuffed with nails and thrown in a bonfire, because what, Professor, whatever you are devaluing the real conversation. You are devaluing and illegitimizing the struggle that all of us are going through to figure out the real deal. You are the enemy. There are many people that may think, Gwendolyn, that this guy may be a tool of the right and that he was a plant planting this story so that he would be like a Trojan horse situation where it would be like, you know, it would be like making the left become unravel. It would make the left unravel because we would be turning on our own people. So that's very clever. That's clever. And certainly too clever for Donald Trump to come up. That's the sort of thing that Dick Cheney would come up with. That's a trick. That's a clever trick. And if it is a trick, and it is from Dick Cheney, though I loathe him and think that he should be stuffed with nails and thrown into a bonfire, his diabolical genius is admirable. I can admire it because he is that poisonous. He is a box jellyfish. He is the funnel web spider of Alaska, of Australia. He is something that is so dangerous. That it's like an orchid that's incredibly beautiful, but one sniff and you instantly are covered with sores and blow up. you look at it and you go, oh, you're so fabulously horrible.
He gives credence to my mother's old epitaph, which was, some people, darling, are too effing mean to die.
Yes. He is, and it's ironic that his daughter is a lesbian. That's so funny. It's ironic that Newt Gingrich, though not nearly as smart and as devilish as Dick Cheney, it's interesting that Newt Gingrich had, what was it, a sister who was gay? I can't remember. Yeah. Anyway, it's interesting where lesbians and gay men pop up all over the place. You know, is it true that Anita Bryant's son was gay? Just different things.
Yeah.
But this
yes,
stuff.
It was.
Yeah. I want to keep to the subject, though. I want to make sure nobody else has called in. I wish you would. Phone numbers. The phone number is 323-784-9639. That's 323-784-9639. I wanted to mention, I did mention that. I won't mention who was on Fox today commenting on there was a panel of celebrity commentators, someone from Rolling Stone magazine, different people, and they were commenting on the Grammys last night. And it was interesting. This was on Fox. It was on the Fox Morning Show with Rosanna Scotto. And what was fascinating was everyone was talking about the fashions, the performances, how the Grammys were such a love fest and the best Grammy show ever. Apparently, they took the criticism from last year and really applied it. This year, there was so much love and joy and talent and great music and great moments. It was amazing. And the zenith of the night, well, there were several, but the zenith of the night may have been when was it Alicia Keys and Lady Gaga, Jennifer Lopez,
Jada Pinkett Smith,
and then the ultimate, Michelle Obama, came out on stage. Now, Michelle Obama, first of all, she's 10 feet taller than the others. It was like Michelle Obama walked into, you know, Munchkin Land. Everyone was like coming up to her hip. She towered over them, and she was the surprise guest. No one had said anything, so she had surprised everyone by simply walking in backstage, you know, out of a limo in that great outfit, that incredible gunmetal outfit. And she walked in, and then they were out on stage. And the audience went nuts. And then they had everyone speak before her, and each person that spoke and said a short sentence or whatever, they got applause. And then she was the last to speak, and she opened her mouth, and if you weren't paying attention, if you were looking away, you would have thought, oh, what happened? Merely the fact that she opened her mouth, the crowd went nuts and continued. It was a huge, huge ovation, screaming and yelling. The very fact that she would open her mouth caused the show to stop, and she received a thunderous ovation, bigger than the other women got for their full comments. And they were generous. They were applauding. Everyone was happy. It was a love fest.
And then I have to tell you, I was just mother love in red with Diana Ross. I mean, mother love. She just came out and sang.
Yes, she came out in that wonderful, like, 17th century dress, modern version of the 17th with the panniers. And she was mother love. In her situation, I'm glad that worked out, because we all know the stories of how crazy Diana Ross has been off and on over the decades. Diana Ross is, it is true, Diana Ross is 126 years old, and half of that time has been spent in strange, like, altercations with police or agents or waitresses or whatever. She's had an up and down. Michelle Obama is clearly as close to the Virgin Mary. She is a cross between the Virgin Mary and Eleanor Roosevelt. She seems untouchable. And she was magnificent last night, and it was wonderful to see that. And the Grammys were not embarrassing. There wasn't stuff going on that embarrassed the higher principles and angels of what we're all trying to achieve. I just wanted to acknowledge that, because there's someone who is African-American, who has two daughters that seem to be very poised, who are not like the Bush twins. Her husband is impeccable. It's just, we're living in an age when it's like all of this jumble, from Ilhan Omar to the Black Israelites to Michelle Obama to, Eddie Murphy, too. We've got black, we've got white, we've got blackface, we've got whiteface, we've got satire, we've got intelligent comedy, we've got stupidity. It is enormous. It is enormous. And the only thing I could say, and we've spent three quarters of a show, the one thing I would just urge everyone, please, is to, when you see something, wherever it is, whether it's on Fox, which I watch because I always want to know what the enemy is saying, or if it's on MSNBC, or if it's in the Post or the Daily News, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, if it's at the dinner table with your family that lives in Indiana, or it's with your fag and lesbian friends in Greenwich Village, at a burger joint, I want you to take a breath and look carefully. Let your pupils dilate fully so that you see everything. You breathe, you think. If you have time, Google it. See what the different sites are saying. See what the New York Times says. See what the Wall Street Journal says. See what the different commentators are saying. And then make your decisions and go forward. There are certain things that seem to be more true than others. Governor Northam, he may stay in office if he decides that, he wants to go that route. In my opinion, and I'm saying this, preface everything in my opinion, by the way. In my opinion, Governor Northam's wallet is empty now. His reputation wallet is empty. A moth has flown out. There's nothing he can do. His lieutenant governor, who's being accused by two different women of sexual impropriety or assault, people are innocent until proven guilty. He did not do whiteface. He's a black man who didn't do blackface. He didn't do anything like that. He's being accused of apparently a crime, and that is going to have to resolve itself. We have to remember that, people are innocent until proven guilty. I'm certainly no fan of Justice Kavanaugh, and he has I won't say the F word because I'm not allowed to. He has screwed people like Susan Collins of Maine, who was stupid enough to proposed that he would be a good choice and a rational, reasonable choice. And here he is already, you know, sinking Roe versus Wade. He's already nibbling away at something that is decades old. So this is, here we go. Here we go. I believe that his accuser was correct. I believe that she did. But again, I'm not on a jury. I can't be, my decision is not, I can't sway that. Anyway, if it had been a referendum, I would have voted against him. As if Northam was governor and they were doing a Virginia referendum and I was a voter on a referendum, I would definitely vote that he should step down, that he should be, replaced. And I'm actually surprised that the state of Virginia, or the Commonwealth, I should say, someone has not said, let's have a referendum on this. I'm surprised that he didn't. If he's that confident, as governor, he should have asked for a referendum. Throw his arms wide, face the cameras in Virginia and say, my fellow Virginians, I would like to propose that this week we have a referendum on whether I stay in office or not. I put myself in your hands. And it would be very interesting to see what happens. Do the voters think that he should be out, or do they think he should stay in? It would be up to the Virginians, as commentators on MSNBC have said, that it is up to the citizens of Virginia to decide whether they want him to stay in office or not. So that's just that. What do you think, Gwendolyn? Do you think a referendum, or what do you think would be the situation?
I think that basically people are going to keep at him until he makes some move towards reconciling what who can take his place. I don't think they're going to let him get away with it, as it were. It's just caused such a fuss. But like you said, the news cycle runs so fast that by tomorrow we could be talking about something else. We do have another caller online right now.
We have another caller?
Yeah.
Hi, yes, caller. Who's this?
Hello. Hello, it's Kim Young from Kansas.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I just wanted to make a couple of comments about the Grammys last night, because that was one of the best feel-good nights I've had in a long time with entertainment on television.
I agree, yeah.
Yeah.
Dolly Parton, I think, is like a national treasure. Diana Ross is still the diva beyond belief at her age. And Alicia Keys, there's just not enough words to describe how talented.
So
holy,
lovely, so gracious.
Awesome,
and what
cool,
I love commentators today compared her to a hostess inviting people into her home, or like a mother inviting people to her dinner table. It was literally like we were in her home while she was hosting
was,
that event. It
was
so friendly and lovely and unglitzy. Mm-hmm. She was not glitzy. There was nothing over glittery or silly or sparkly. She was just a wonderfully warm lady who invited a whole bunch of friends into her house. And boy, dinner was really great. It was great. Yeah, what else? Go on.
Well, I mean, it's like more things like that could really make a change for the better, I think. I don't know. I just had this more positive feelings, vibes after watching that than I'd had in months and months and months and months. So I don't know how we do that, but...
Well, the old expression, living well by example, living well is, and it doesn't mean living richly, like expensively and rubbing your neighbor's noses in the fact that you're well-to-do. It means having a home that is happy and joyous, and living a joyous life is the best way to sway people. It's the most winning thing to do. We had no business exporting weapons to other countries. We should have been exporting Coca-Cola and McDonald's and our Motown music. America should have been based on exporting joy, and that would have won the Cold War. Instead of making everyone enemies and arming enemies against enemies and figuring out who's the enemy of who. Okay, well, if you're better to us, if you give us more tin or more petroleum, we'll give you weapons. And look at what we've done with Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia, we're petroleum whores. We're crack whores, but on petroleum. And we turned them into our pimp. And now we're at the mercy of a kingdom that is very oppressive and is, you know, talk about the 1% while the rest of the country is, you know, poor. Mm-hmm. And look what's happened. We've turned that into a totally toxic situation because we were addicted to their oil. So
Mommy.
I feel like we should export joy. Yes, Gwendolyn.
Thank you. We do have another caller on the Topard, and this is the second time they've tried to call in. So can I open their mic? Do all mics at once.
We only have a few minutes, Kim. I didn't want to interrupt you. I'm sorry I got off on that tin. Are you still there?
No, that's awesome. I love export joy. Let's work on that. Okay, good night. I'll keep listening.
No. Stay on. We can take everyone, can't we, Gwen?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I've opened the mic, 513 area code. I'm sorry.
Okay, Gwen.
Gwen,
you're going to have to tell us when we're out of time because we're almost out of time here, aren't we?
Right. You've got five minutes to go.
Okay.
And
new
five,
caller. Who is it?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
You can hear me? Okay. This delay is a little bit funny. This is your friend. This is Steve R. in Cincinnati. Miss
Stephen,
and Gwendolyn, how are you all? Fine.
How's your kitty?
Wonderful. Mr. Sherman is, well, he must be in his leopard cat bed in the middle room that's the warmest, all curled up for his mid-evening nap.
Great. Well, listen, I just want to say, I wish you and Kim had called earlier because we're literally at the end of the show. Do you want to weigh in quickly? Like, we've got only a matter of a minute.
Just quickly, and it probably should be quick. You were talking about the Grammys, which I missed last night, but on the internet there was a big brouhaha over this funny little. I coined a new term. This is copyright me. It's twitwink, TWITWINK, by the name of Ricky Rebel, and he's all over the internet because he's just very gay, very out there, very swishy, in some shots almost basically porn modelish in his nakedness. Glam rock band gay kid, and apparently he was in some other bands before, but there's a big brouhaha. He showed up at the Grammys with a big thing in Trump, the word Trump on his garb, and saying, you keep America great. And there's several interviews out there with him going, I just want to work. And, well, President, I like Trump because he's the alpha male. And I think, okay, I think it's not even a political statement. I don't think he has a political thought, you know, in his four-neuron brain, you know. I think it's a sexual thing. Basically, when he said Trump's the top dog, alpha male, it's like, okay, this is just your little sexual ploy saying, I'm a little submissive twinky twink, and I will lick the rear end of any top dog, no matter how horrible they are, or something. I can't quite figure it out. Everyone is pouring hate and ridicule all over this person, and I thought I should mention it since it was the day after the Grammys, and it'll be too late next week. Anyway, that's it. I'm just wondering if you saw that and wondered whether you had a quick comment on him.
I did, Stephen. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to open the show with that too next week because that is an interesting wrinkle on the whole LGBTQ community. Yeah. And there's also the woman who's the musician who's very mediocre, but she wore a gown that was the wall.
Uh-huh.
I'll look her up. But
I
thank you.
That.
We'll look into that again. As you said, well, you didn't see it, but as Gwendolyn and Kim both said, the night for the most part was 99.999% of the Grammys was the most joyous, lovely celebration of American music and culture. It was a triumph, and so
I'm sad that I missed it. I in the past I've tended to watch it just because of the performances. And the filmography and videography and the way everything is done, it's one of the most artistic of the shows that is done, as you might expect. And I just kind of totally flaked out and forgot about it. So, anyway.
All right, well,
Mommy, you're up.
Kim, thank you. Stephen, thank you.
Bye-bye.
I'm gonna sign off. I hope you guys will call back next Monday, which, by the way, every Monday night we're on at 8 o'clock live. Eastern Standard Time, 7 Central, 6 Rocky Mountain Time. I want to thank my sponsors, DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. Gwendolyn, I want to thank you as always, and I want to remind everyone you can find Mummy on SybilSez.com, that's Sybil, S-E-Z, and SybilBrunchen.com at the Lollipop Guild, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram, and check out my YouTube channel too, by the way. All right, Gwendolyn, Why don't you sing us on out of here, and I will see you next Monday. I love you.
I
good night, everybody.
You. Good night, everybody.